It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 531 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week I have a special guest, and that's Alex Schrader, a tenor and director who's working with the Arizona Opera to bring Carmen the graphic novel to print via Kickstarter. He's working with several great creators, including P. Craig Russell and Anike, to bring this epic 90-page hardcover graphic novel to print. We talk about comics and music and how well they go together at times, how this project came to be, and comics in general, of course. After you listen to our engaging conversation, be sure to go to Kickstarter and support this excellent project before it concludes on Thursday, April 28, at 11:59 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. I had a fun conversation with Alex, so I'm sure you're going to enjoy what he has to say. There's a lot to get to in this episode, so let's get on with the show. It's great to welcome to the podcast Alex Schrader, who is working on a Kickstarter for Carmen the graphic novel with Arizona Opera, which is doing real well. How you doing, Alex?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me.
It's good to talk with you, and of course, congratulations are in order. You've already passed your $20,000 goal as we're recording this a little early, so that's great.
Yes, it's a wonderful feeling. I've never been a creator of a Kickstarter before. I backed several things, but this feeling of support just fills me with love for the planet. I'm so happy that we're going to get to share this beautiful book that we've created about this opera.
Mm-hmm. Now, people always get on me because I don't do this soon enough, but the goal will is going to reach its, let's see, what's the way to say that? The project will be funded if it reaches its goal by Thursday, April 28, 2022, 11:59 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. I should have just read that. That would have been better. But but you're already there, and you were telling me before we started to record that you got your goal within the first 3 days, right?
Yeah, within 72 hours. We've had a tremendous amount of support from people that I didn't even suspect would even know about us. Margaret Atwood, Neil Gaiman. I mean, there's people, Matt Kent, Phil Jimenez. There's just people, you know, in the industry, in the comic industry, that I had no expectation would even be aware of us. I mean, I knew, you know, P. Craig Russell had a very strong following. I knew Anake had a strong following, and Hassan has a strong following. But at the end of the day, we're making a comic book about an opera, which I hope would sound interesting to many, many readers. But the amount of support that we got already is just mind-blowing to me. But the more the merrier, you know, we've got about 4 more weeks here or something like that. And so let's do it. Let's join the party.
Because as we're talking, you already have more than 370 backers.
Yeah, it's incredible. It's amazing.
That's a lot of people would kill to get 370 backers. So you're doing extremely well.
I'm over the moon, really. I can't say enough how thrilled I am that this is happening.
Now, the way that this project came to be kind of interested me, and then I want to get into the project itself. You suggested that they had a contest of sorts, and they trying to find the exact title of it on the an on pitch challenge they had in early 2020, and you proposed to do this graphic novel, and your proposal won.
That's right. I know that there were about 200. Other submissions, you know, it was like Shark Tank, really. And Arizona Opera was looking for projects that could generate some revenue through alternative means other than the traditional wealthy patrons, large donations, which is how most American opera is funded. It's very philanthropic. But they were hoping they could earn some money some other way. And they wanted anyone at all to be creative about it, as long as it was, you know, either tangentially or directly involving an opera. Mm-hmm. So I know of a few other projects. For example, there was a streaming platform designed for mobile devices that was going to be considered. And I know, actually, Butter of Mine submitted an idea to have an opera-based brewery that would do microbrews sort of thematically for different operas. But that's it. I don't even know what the other projects were. I just thought that this, you know, graphic novel could be achievable for an opera company who would, you know, first of all, we'd have to get the team together, the team of artists, and then we'd have to, you know, create the book, and then we'd have to publish the thing. So I felt like all of that was possible in the grand scheme of things, and we luckily did it. We moved forward.
It sounds like I'm getting an echo.
I think, you know, I think our Zencaster picked back up. We just closed that out. How's that?
That's better. That's better.
Okay, good.
I'll just edit that stuff out. Let me know when that happened. 546. Okay, so now I'll edit this part out so it just goes in. So I'm kind of fascinated that they actually want to do this because, you know, comics and opera, I don't know many comics that are based on operas. In fact, I can't think of any. So I'm,
there's a handful, yeah.
Which ones do you know of?
Well, there's only a few. So actually, P. Craig Russell is like the godfather of them all. He did, I believe he did 11 before this one. And there are things like The Magic Flute. Mm-hmm. He did the entire Wagner Ring cycle. Mm-hmm. And he did other things like Zalame. Mm-hmm. Let's see, Pagliacci. So just, you know, several. He's a big opera fan. He's a classical music buff. And mm-hmm. so when I knew that this project was going to happen, I knew I had to at least talk to him about it. Mm-hmm. I had to get some advice from him, pick his brain about how this thing gets made. And like, he knocked me off my feet. He offered to do the layouts himself.
Wow.
And so I was like, just blown away. Like, yes, of course. Anything you want, Craig, just help me make this book. In addition to his, though, there are, Gil Kane drew another Wagner's Ring cycle back in the 80s, and French illustrator Alex Alice has a trilogy on Siegfried, which is, again, Wagnerian.
Wow. That's great, all that, those kind of things. I knew P. Craig Russell had done several things. He'd done other books that were related to literary works and stuff like that that I had known of, but I didn't know that he had done all those opera ones. How about that?
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, he is a true opera fan. He holds little recitals at his home. He's very interested in opera and the classical music scene. It's a passion of his.
I'm always interested when people like comics and something else. I have some friends of mine who are big sports fans. They love comics, but they also like sports. And I'm like, how does that happen? Because a lot of people are either or, but they're not the two of them. And I'm always interested when I come across people who like something else besides that. So, wow, that's a great bridge to have to be able to do that, because Mr. Russell is a well-known commodity in the comics industry. So that's great. So I was going to ask how he got involved, and apparently you called and talked with them, and he volunteered. What a great thing.
Yeah, it was incredible. I reached out on social media, I think at Facebook, and he responded. And not only did he respond, he said, we should set up a time to talk because he was, you know, he has an interest in this stuff. And then we had a great conversation. It was mostly about opera and little about comics. And I was, you know, I was getting kind of nervous. I'm like, okay, but I need to ask him all of these really like technical writing layout questions. And then he said, well, hey, I'll just do it myself.
Wow. Wow. That's great. Now you yourself are a singer, a tenor, and a director.
Yes, that's right. I was first a singer exclusively. And then, as the years went by, I found myself sort of, frustrated creatively. Many of the productions that I was performing in, I felt didn't exactly satisfy my creative taste. And so the only way to be in control of a production like that is to be the director. And so I started directing.
How do you do that? I mean, how do you make that leap from singer to director?
Yeah, it's hard. It's complicated. You have to have someone that gives you a shot. You have to have someone who believes in your, not only your creativity or your vision, but your leadership and your organization. And it's not so easy to just, to have an idea. You've got to have it all well planned out, because you're in charge of everything. You gotta run the show, you know? Mm-hmm. So I had a couple opportunities, to direct some small things here and there, which became larger opportunities, and then I eventually started getting even larger ones, making movies of opera and things like that.
What movies have you made? That's interesting.
Yeah, well, I co-wrote and co-directed a movie based on Mozart's opera called La Clemenza di Tito with the Curtis Institute in Philadelphia. Mm. And then just about a couple weeks ago, I wrapped a second film with them that is Menotti's opera called The Medium, and that's paired with a very rare opera by Mark Blitzstein called Triple Sec.
Wow. 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 I'm getting an education here on opera. I have to admit, yeah. my only exposure to opera has to do with Bugs Bunny, and I just,
it's great.
It's
perfect.
I was looking at his last line in his What's Opera doc was what always makes me laugh. He says, what did you expect in an opera? A happy ending? And if you know anything about opera, that was a hilarious line. I know enough to know that was hysterically funny. So I just thought that was wonderful.
You know, What's Opera doc is when people ask me, well, you know, what's the first opera I should see? I say, What's Opera doc? That's it. You start with that. That's just like this comic, just like this graphic novel, hopefully. That can be a gateway. That can be an invitation to the opera house. You know, you've seen Bugs Bunny do it. So now come see human beings do it in its actual context, you know?
Very cool. Very cool. Because I'm always intrigued by that. I mean, I've seen performances. I've seen stage plays and stuff, but never really quite opera. So it's pretty good. Uh-huh. Now, let's talk about the Carmen itself. It's a four-act performance, right?
Yes, that's right.
And
usually acts three and four are done together.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. So that's how we've broken up our, if you want to call them chapters, mm-hmm. our books in three parts, with acts three and four taking up the final 30 pages together.
Oh, wow. Because it says on the Kickstarter page, it's 150 years since it actually debuted.
That's right.
Wow.
That's true.
So it's a classic.
And it's absolutely, it's among the most popular, if not the most popular opera ever created. And, you know, its premiere was sort of scandalous. Mm-hmm. It was premiered in an opera house that was known for sort of lighter fare, sort of happier stories. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the drama, of the elements of Carmen can be considered this sort of lighter, called comique style. Hmm. But then you also have something called Verismo, which is supposed to be really, really real and gritty and dirty. You know, these are real people. Mm-hmm. And there's definitely a lot of that in Carmen. So you have this, like, It would be like if, like, you're watching The Princess Bride, mm-hmm. and then by the end, it became The Godfather.
Hmm.
You know, and it's like, it was this sort of shocking, brutal ending that a lot of people didn't like because they didn't expect it. They were shocked. Mm-hmm. And so the premiere didn't go very well, but about 8 years later, it came back and it was a huge success, and it's been among the most popular, most performed operas ever since.
Isn't that interesting? Because, you know, I sing in choir, and the one thing we do every year at the church where I sing is we do Handel's Messiah, like a sing-along.
Yeah.
And I remember the history of the Messiah when it first debuted. It got terribly reviewed. It was just what a horrible thing it was. And here we are, more than a century later, still singing that piece, you know, for stuff. I'm always interested in what stands the test of time and stuff like that.
That's it. That's what I was going to say. The test of time, you know, a lot of people reject new things just instinctively, mm-hmm. you know, change is very hard to embrace, mm-hmm. you know, and so you hear something new for the first time. You think, I don't like that. I like the old stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But then years go by mm-hmm. and what used to be new is now mm-hmm. is now older. And people like it because they're familiar with it.
Mm-hmm. And they miss it.
That's right.
That's what does me. If we don't do like a Messiah hymn sing every year, it's not Christmas to me.
Yeah, so, I hear you. Yeah,
I really love that. So it's interesting. So talk about translating this into a comic. I mean, how familiar were you with the opera that you were able to do that? I mean, did you have to really study it in depth?
Yeah, I mean, I was extremely familiar with it already. My wife has actually performed the role of Carmen many times. I have only done scenes from it because I'm not the right type of tenor to sing José, the lead tenor. Mm-hmm. I'm more of a Raymondado, who is one of the smugglers, one of the minor characters. Mm-hmm. And I've only understudied that role. Mm-hmm. But I was in the chorus of Carmen as a soldier / smuggler number three, the guy who got to hold the lantern, which was like my greatest achievement at that point. It was the very first professional thing I had ever done. So,
wow.
You know, it's meaningful to me mm-hmm. in that way. But I was, you know, I'm very familiar with the story and the music, but that didn't mean that I didn't just pour over the novella and both versions of the libretto. And, you know, I it's in French, by the way. So I'm like translating myself. I'm making sure that I can really milk any sort of context out of the verbiage, out of the lyrics mm-hmm. that were chosen, you know, by the creators of the opera. Mm-hmm. And, I spent a lot of time making sure I had the essence exactly right. And then, you know, you have to really whittle it down to fit words on a comic book page. You know,
yeah.
The point is the art, right?
Right.
So I'm trying to get out of the way. I don't want these huge balloons all over the place. And you know, I think I was very true to the spirit of the libretto, mm-hmm. But I didn't just put every single word into the comic book script.
Mm-hmm.
I picked what was important, or I paraphrased, or I completely rewrote exchanges in dialogue to, you know, to move things along mm-hmm. and keep the most important bits.
Mm-hmm. Any chance you might put this in French at some point?
Well, we could. I would love to. We spoke briefly about, we wanted to start with Spanish. Mm-hmm. Because there's the Arizona Opera really likes to involve their Spanish speakers in the region, and so we talked about that mm-hmm. at one point. And I think if the Kickstarter does really really well, we'll be able to afford reprinting in other languages other than English. French would be great. But I don't think it's next on the list.
Okay. That's intriguing because I would think because since the opera was in French, that would be the next step.
Sure. Yeah, no, you're right. You know, it's my way of thinking, and I think you have a point, but I think that if you give the content consumers, if you give the readers something in their vernacular, that they'll be able to understand the story, and then hopefully it'll make them curious. And so when they come see the opera, 9 times out of 10, it will be done in the original language, in French. So they'll get both experiences eventually.
I had a friend of mine who was really into opera, and he was talking about the fact that if you go to Italy, they sing opera in the streets. And, of course, and I said, well, there's a reason why they do that, because they speak Italian, and they're singing in Italian when they do that. If you come to America and sing in Italian, most people will go, huh? What's that?
Yeah.
You know, so
That's true.
It's interesting to me, but it's just so fascinating how this gets. So how long did it take you to actually get the script put together?
I would say maybe about a month, about a month. And that's for all 90 pages. That's the whole thing. But then, when I started editing myself, when I started trying to make this the best that it could be before I passed it off to Craig, that's when I started to sort of like second guess. Like I started counting the words on the page. I started counting the panels and like how I thought everything could fit, you know, and I sent the first draft of the first 30 pages to Craig, and he called me and said, look, good try. But, you know, we can't work with this yet.
did he help you with that?
Oh, yeah, he did. No, absolutely. I threw it out and started completely over those first 30 pages, and then we got to a place where we were both happy. Essentially, what I was trying to do, I'm a completist, and I was just cramming too many details in there, too many, you know, specific instructions or Easter eggs or crap like that. And, you know, Craig absolutely was right to convince me that what we have to focus on are the dramatic beats, not only, you know, the page, but like each panel and how the flow and the rhythm will feed the next panel, you know, and that really helped me streamline what was vital to each page. And so when he was doing the layouts then for the first 30 pages, I went back and rewrote the others.
Interesting. Well, thank goodness you had an artist who understood the subject matter. Boy, that was a...
Oh, yeah. No, goodness. Exactly. Exactly. We could talk about the music, and we could talk about the purpose that, you know, Bizet intended each of these little like musical motifs and these dramatic moments and how we could interpret them, you know, for our graphic novel.
Now, why don't you give people a basic idea what the story is about?
Sure. So Carmen is about a young woman who she's got a sharp wit. She's got strong emotions. She's got a real joie de vivre. You know, she enjoys life and youth and being alive. And yet, all she wants is her freedom. You know, she wants autonomy, and that is challenged by practically everyone, by society, by misogyny, and by men who want to control her, and they won't accept no from her. And so she's just constantly challenged that way. And eventually she decides that she's going to let fate choose what happens to her. But, you know, under no circumstances will she be controlled. You know, she's going to, at the cost of her own life even, she will always be free. And it's not a happy ending, unfortunately.
As Bugs Bunny would say.
That's right. That's exactly right. But you know, she's strong. She's strong in that decision to live that way. And I think the music is wonderful. The music is glorious. And so that's a very good reason why this opera has been popular for 150 years. But I also think that the story is so powerful and meaningful and communicates on so many levels to audiences then, and especially audiences now. You know, the story still needs to be told. The story still needs to be heard. And so, you know, we keep telling it.
Mm-hmm. See, what intrigues me so much, and this is it's really, this was written 150 years ago. That puts it in the late 1800s, roughly. Yeah. And yet the main character is a woman.
Yes.
In that time, in that era, that was something rather, you're talking about, you know, groundbreaking or, outstanding or unique. That's, you know, now if we did something like that, that would be considered groundbreaking. But even back then, that must have been, what the? You know, you talked about how some people looked at it and went around, were like, we don't understand where this came from, you know, kind of a thing. Because that must have been something that startled people to have like a woman main character instead of a male.
Yeah, so the novella was written in 1845, 30 years before the opera. Mm-hmm. And even though the novella is called Carmen, it's really all about José. It's really all about this guy who he's troubled. He's absolutely a troubled guy. And, he murders somebody. He wants to be a priest. He's very religious, but he has a hot temper and he kills somebody. So he has to flee. And then he becomes a soldier. And then he kind of meets this attractive young woman and gets kind of obsessed with her and finds himself getting in trouble pursuing her. And, of course, it's Carmen. Mm-hmm. And so really the novella tells the story of I guess, the downfall of this guy, José. And the opera is, while it's true to the novella, it also it enhances it at the same time. Mm-hmm. For example, there are new characters. There's kind of a foil to Carmen in a character called Micaela, who is meant to be very chaste and very pure, mm-hmm. As opposed to Carmen's like wildness, you know. And mm-hmm. and so you set that up that maybe José will go with this boring, nice girl, even though like we all know that Carmen is much more interesting. Mm-hmm. And then down the line, we have the famous bullfighter, the mm-hmm. Toreador song. It's like one of the most, you know, that's
right.
Everybody knows that song, right? Mm-hmm. So he's there to kind of piss José off. He's there to kind of like to show José that Carmen loses interest in men, you know, because someone better came along, you know. And both of those characters don't really exist in the novella in the way that they do in the opera. So you did have the tradition in opera of the diva, you know, of the leading lady who's going to sing a big aria and, you know, be the star of the show. But certainly I think you're right, the novella was focused on the male character, and that did trickle into the opera.
So why did they, when they did the opera, they named it Carmen, and obviously mm-hmm. the Carmen character is apparently the focus. I mean, why did they make that switch when they did the opera?
Well, to me, it's as easy as saying that Carmen is the hero and José is the villain. Sometimes Carmen gets kind of a bad rap and people call her a seductress, mm-hmm. you know, or some type of, you know, nympho. And mm-hmm. and she's like, she's corrupting this nice boy, José. But that's not true. That's not in the novella. You know, he's a bad guy. Mm-hmm. He may not appear to be, you know, but he, just because he's good looking and a soldier, doesn't make him a good guy. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's the trick. If you set that up, if you know that Carmen, despite her like disregard for society's rules, mm-hmm. is really just a young girl who wants to live her life, mm-hmm. and you've got José, who has this real darkness inside, mm-hmm. then you understand we're going to watch our hero Carmen, against the villain José, and how they come together and how they grow apart, and then, you know, the tragic ending.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Well, it sounds like a really interesting story. Now, it's 90 pages, a hardcover graphic novel. And who now, you said that Russell does the layouts, but who's the artist who does the finishes?
We've got Aneke, who's doing everything else. Mm-hmm. She's doing all the lines and colors.
Mm. And she's known for Bylines and Blood, according to the Kickstarter page. And stuff.
Yeah, that's right. That's a new one that she created.
I love the cover. Artist, yeah. Cover is really gorgeous with the red color and the what looks like is a dress, but it's kind of much more than a dress. The way it's portrayed, flowers and like all kinds of other stuff.
Exactly, big flamenco dress with lots of layers there. But the flower petals are intentional because it's a big plot device. Carmen seems to sort of enchant this rose. And then she throws it at Jose, and that's when, you know, it hits him right in the face, and boom, he's entranced by her.
It's so interesting because, you know, these days, you know, the women, you know, if you read comics, it's just now in comics, female leads are starting to become more expected or more the norm, or, you know.
Sure.
And in my reading of comics, I have read men as leading people for decades, and I know all the ins and outs. But the moment you put a woman in as a lead, I suddenly don't know what's going to happen, and that makes it so much more interesting to me. So I'm just intrigued by it. I've got to ask you, though, I mean, as far as comics goes, what's your experience with comics before this?
Oh, so my whole life I've been a comic fan and comic collector. I still have my childhood collection. It's all, you know, beat up and torn and rolled, but I have all of them. Mm-hmm. My earliest surviving books are Superman and X-Men and stuff like that. My most cherished possession is X-Factor 24 when Archangel first appeared in full costume. Wow. And I mean, that meant so much to me. I mean, it's beat to crap. So I found online someone had slabbed 9.8, but also signed by both Simonsons. Mm-hmm. So I snatched that up, and that's on my wall at home.
Wow.
You know, but I got to say, you know, pre-internet, it was hard for a kid who got a quarter every week or so to really have a strong comic book habit. Mm-hmm. And so what I spent my money on was actually the official handbook of the Marvel Universe. And that would teach me, you know, encyclopedic information about everyone, and then I could really decide, okay, I need to go track down this character or this storyline, save my pennies, and then I go get a couple back issues every now and then.
Mm-hmm. Trades and stuff like that are things that are great for you, I bet.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And these days, you know, so I stuck with it, though. when I was making more money, then I could afford more books, and I really responded very strongly to in the early 2000s Jeff Parker's Agents of Atlas and Eric Powell's The Goon. Of course, Mignola's Hellboy was like a huge influence on me, as it was for a bunch of people. And these days I'm picking up single issues of all the ongoing, anything Tom King writes I get, anything Brian K. Vaughan writes, I get. Mm-hmm. You know, I feed my habit.
Well, you know, it's Tom King doesn't write as much as he did for a while there. Tom Taylor is the one that seems to be writing and writing and writing a lot these days. And
the other Tom,
The two Toms and stuff like that. I get a kick. Tom King, I've actually interviewed both of those for this podcast. And
cool.
They're fun to talk with about, you know, Tom King was a U.S. agent before.
Yeah.
He was a comics guy. And so his stuff actually influenced a lot of his writing. And so I'm always intrigued to see when he does those. He brings a lot more of a realistic feel to it.
Yeah, I agree. Like Sheriff of Babylon was a lot of that. And Strange Adventures, too, was big with the CIA stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, it'd be great to have this put up on the bookshelf next to all those books. Wouldn't that be something to have there?
Man, that's wild. I can't even imagine that yet.
So how far along is the artwork right now? It sounds like you've got the script done, though, right?
Yep, the scripts are done, layouts are done. We're finishing up the final pages and then lettering. So we're complete. I would say we are completely finished. Like the pages are done, for most of the book. And, we're just making a few tweaks to the last pages.
Wow. Okay. That'd be great. I'm anxious to see it. I got to make sure I get my, I got to follow my own advice and get out there and back this thing to make sure that it happens. Cause it's just a great, great, it sounds like something. I love something that teaches me I like books, for example. I buy a lot of European comics because I learn a lot about their culture and stuff like that from that.
You'll love this. You'll love this. This is all in Spain, you know? Yes, it's been sort of distilled through let's see, four French men and then me. But, you know, it was really important to me to portray the Spanish, not only the Spanish culture, but the Roma culture. Of that time period, which is one of the reasons why I'm, you know, extremely grateful and fortunate that Aneke agreed to do it, because she is a young woman, she's a young Spanish woman, and she still lives in Spain. And so if anybody knows about Spain, it's her.
Wow. Great, great. So it's just, it sounds like such a great and interesting novel and an educational thing for me. I'm going to want to play music in the background from it when I'm listening to it. I'll have to listen to the soundtrack in the background when I'm doing
Absolutely.
That.
Absolutely.
Sounds like fun. Now, let's talk about the Kickstarter itself. You can actually buy, interestingly enough, you can buy a digital version if you want to have it on your computer. You can buy the hardcover that we talked about, and that you pledge $35 to get. And, of course, you have to pay shipping, I'm sure, with that. You can make a donation to the a library, pay for it to go to a library. Then you have prints by various artists. Do you want to talk a little bit about that? How did those come to be?
Yeah, well, so while I was reaching out to people to just gauge interest to see if they wanted to be involved with this project, some people said that they couldn't do the whole book, but let them know if they could be involved in a smaller way. And when finally, I mean, there were many steps along the way, but when finally we decided to make this a Kickstarter graphic novel project, I reached back out to several of these amazing women, and they all said, yes, we'll do one of these, an art print. We'll do a limited piece just for the Kickstarter. And so, you know, we got Erica Henderson, Erica Durso, and colorist Marissa Louise. And off the top of my head, we have Colleen Doran, and we have Natasha Bustos, and we've got Ana Miralles. And how many is that? and Marguerite Sauvage. So, you know, we have the all-star team who are providing images of Carmen. We have three images of Carmen, and then we have one image each of other operatic heroines. We have Tosca, and we have Ariadne from Ariadne of Naxos, and then we have the Queen of the Night from the Magic Flute.
Because I see some of the cover or the prints are on the Kickstarter page, and the beautiful, beautiful artwork is gorgeous.
Yeah, no, they're all stunning, and I just look at the art that was created for this project, and I'm filled with gratitude.
Now you can get three prints along with the graphic novel for $63, which is great. Then there's a Carmen patron tier, which is a little more expensive. That one there is, you get the hardcover as well as all six prints and an autographed playbill for an upcoming Arizona Opera production. Access to an online patron-only event. So you can sign up to be a patron, a Patreon, right?
I don't think it's Patreon. This is that word that we like to use in opera. Patron just means that you are directly funding the existence of opera.
Oh, cool. Okay. And then you can actually buy a golden patron tier with tickets to go and see. Well, is that you're going to go see Carmen with that, or is it different performances?
Well, so COVID kind of messed up our entire timeline. When we decided to make Carmen, to adapt Carmen, Arizona was planning to do a production, a live production of Carmen, and we thought, wouldn't it be great if both of these things coincided and people could come to the show and pick up the book, or pick up the book and then come to the show. And then COVID, of course, and everything got pushed back and delayed and reconfigured. And so they have, their Carmen production has come and gone.
Oh.
At this point, unfortunately, it just closed. I want to say it was about a month ago. But you know, there's going to be Carmen somewhere. There always is. It's playing all over the place all the time.
It'd be great to. Are you autographing the books and stuff like that? You and the other creators?
Sure. Yeah. Absolutely.
Because I was just wondering about that. There's a lot of people who like autographs for those kinds of things. Yeah. It'd be kind of great to have that. The one thing I'm surprised in here, you only gave space for six backers to give a dollar or more.
You caught that? No, that was an error. That was an error that we noticed after the page went live.
Okay.
And so the only way we could remove that tier was to just kill it.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
That still exists. In the you can donate any amount you want just as a good deed.
Good. That makes, 'cause some people like that. They just want to give a little money towards it, or give. Some people don't give a little money. Some people give a lot if you let them. And so when I saw that at the bottom, I went, I would say you probably need more of that. So you've already got two backers as we're talking. By the time this posts, I'm sure there'll be more. But,
oh, cool. Okay.
such a great concept. I love things, like I said, that teach me things that I learn from. And this sounds like one of those experiences that's going to be great. We'll probably learn a lot about that time period, as well as women in that time period and men in that time period, too. And just sounds like it's just a wonderful, wonderful thing to do. So, wow. It's going to stop on Thursday, August 28th at 11:59 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Do not wait until then. When you get done listening to this interview, be sure to get out there and support this, because this is the kind of thing I like. I love it when comics kind of stretch their boundaries and go different places. And this is a perfect example of how comics can do that and do that well. So I think it's
great. Thank you, yes. I totally agree. 100%.
Just a great, great, great story. Now, let's say, is there a way to follow Arizona Opera online?
Yes. I think they're most active on Facebook and Instagram. They do have a Twitter feed, but I think they prefer Facebook and Instagram.
Okay. Now, what about you, Alec? Is there a place where people can follow you on social media?
Yes. On the other hand, I prefer Twitter almost exclusively. Rarely I'll get on Instagram, and almost never on Facebook. And my handle is just my name, but you have to spell it right. So it's Alekshrader, and that works on Twitter and Instagram.
Okay. Well, great. Now, is there other projects that you're working on? This is kind of swallowing you whole right now.
Well, it's weird. This has been a long time coming. We got all ready to go, and then things shut down, and I went on to other. I even completed other things in the meantime, like my film. And so now that this is live, I can go start editing my movie and release that in the fall. But coming up this summer, I'm performing in St. Louis with the Opera Theater of St. Louis. I'm going to be singing the role of Dan White in the opera Harvey Milk. And then after that, I've got a concert of Handel's opera called Theodora in New York, immediately followed by performances of the role of Iago in Rossini's Otello in Philadelphia.
I'm buying comics all the way.
Oh, you know it. Oh, yeah. I go every time I'm in Philadelphia, I go to Fat Jack's Comic Crypt. I mean, it's awesome.
Well, it's great. It's so interesting to have people that are interested in both comics and another thing, like I was saying. And so it's just great that you're able to kind of marry the two together like that. It's really kind of a fun thing. I love when I see that. Because I've seen some people have sports comics where they their love of sports comes into the comics and stuff like that. Too.
Yeah,
so it's great stuff. Well, all I can say is, Alec, keep it up, and I can't wait to see this book. I'm going to back this as soon as we get done talking, and then I'm going to be looking forward to that book when it comes. Do you know when the book is going to be completed, by the way?
I think they guessed on the Kickstarter, I think they said June of 23.
Okay.
And I have no idea the way the supply chain is functioning. I don't know how long it's going to take to print, but I personally, if you don't tell anybody, I would be hopeful that, we'll have those printed before then, but officially we have, June of 23.
Okay. Well, before that, it's like, Scotty on Star Trek. He says, I get my reputation as a miracle worker by giving an estimate way out, and then I need it before that, and everybody thinks I'm a miracle worker.
That's right. So
That's the way to do it. Well, Alec, keep it up. I know this is going to be a big success. I mean, when we're recording this, you've still got basically a month to go, and you've already got your goal. So, man, I'm hoping for big things for this. So you get all kind of good things. So just keep it up.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it, Wayne.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
That's it for this week. Be back next time when we'll have another great interview with another terrific comics creator. But until then, keep reading your comics.